The Off the Ball Podcast Network. Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Yes, it is over. After all the talk, after all the months and years of build-up to a World Cup quarter-final, Ireland yet again are going to fall short. They are being battered by New Zealand in Tokyo. It is New Zealand 41, Ireland 7, and the pain ain't over yet. There's still 6 minutes to go in this World Cup quarterfinal, but the game was, well over by halftime. An error-ridden performance by Ireland, who've been nowhere near the side that we saw 12 months ago, mistake after mistake, and they've been clinically exposed by a rather brilliant All Blacks performance as well. We will have analysis throughout the afternoon. We're going to talk to Keith Wood and Zinzan Brooke. Owen Sheehan is at the game. He's going to bring us all the reaction from the Ireland camp in this Joe Schmidt's last game in charge. So many high points over the last 6-7 years, but this a desperately sad way for it to end for Schmidt, for Rory Best, and maybe for one or two more of these Ireland players. But they've been absolutely outclassed, and really this is just a reflection on 2019 and the level of performance that Ireland have put in this year, miles away from the performance that beat New Zealand at Lansdowne Road last November. We will have lots of reaction. As I say, we'll hear from the camp as soon as the press conferences are happening. 53106 is the text, and we'd love your thoughts as well. And I'm joined in studio by Michael Swift and Johnny Murphy, who've been here since early this morning watching this game. 41-7, Johnny.
Yeah. I spoke beforehand about trying to win the kick battle and trying to expose Beauden Baird in the backfield like they did this time last year. And you look at their tries in the first half specifically, and they come from errors from Irish players, and then the All Blacks are just so clinical that it's they just don't have an opportunity. The second try comes from a missed penalty where Johnny Sexton's trying to really go for the juggler there and put it right on the 5 metre line, but they lose that kick battle, so the ball gets kicked out. It doesn't go out. Kearney puts it up and under, then he loses the contestable in the air to Barrett, who pings an absolute pearler down the right hand side, and they turn over the line out ball. And it's a try. So they just lose. They're losing the areas that they were trying to focus on that would give them an opportunity to win the game.
Ireland have just scored a second try. It is a penalty try. I think one of the All Blacks players literally just threw his body in front of the post, and he was punished for that by Nigel Owens. So it means Ireland are putting, look, a little bit of respectability on the scoreboard. New Zealand 41, Ireland 14. But Michael, there's no getting away from just how poor performance this is. And we know the All Blacks are good. Yeah. We know they're two-time world champions. And maybe we got our hopes up during the week that this isn't an All Black side of the quality of 2015 or 2011. But they were never tested in this game. It's hard to fully overstate just how many mistakes Ireland made in that first half.
Absolutely. As we said, look, for all New Zealand's flair in attack, it all came from Ireland's mistakes. And in the first half in particular, they were just enemies of their own downfall. The amount of unforced errors, which is so un-Irish-like. Well, we say so un-Irish-like, but there's been glimpses of it in the last 12 months. And we can't say that, you know, as Irish supporters, we always felt there was a performance in there. But the last calendar year, it hasn't shown that. And as I said, the amount of unforced errors that Ireland produced in the first half and just gave momentum again to New Zealand, and they're the best in the world at capitalising and transitioning from defence into attack. And as well as being physically kind of bullied up front, they were mentally fatigued, the Irish team. And when they were asked to start chasing the game, which they're, you know, traditionally not good at, they just looked like rabbit in headlights, and they just had no plan B to try and counter what had gone on in the first half.
We spoke about that while we were watching it, Swifty. They had an opportunity in the New Zealand 22, and they end up kicking the ball away. But like, not a grubber kick where you're trying to create confusion. They kick it up in the air, and it's no contestable. They just literally like, oh, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And it's summed up. Their performance is summed up in the first 30 seconds of the second half. Mwanga kicks a ball, but the ball has passed back into the 22. He kicks it out. It's probably gone out on the full. Stockdale catches it and then steps out. That leads to, I have it written down, it leads to, I think, 7 minutes of pressure in the Ireland 22, and it leads to a Cody Taylor try. And like that just sums up the individual errors and where they were, where they're at the moment, which is probably the most disappointing thing. That's basic.
Yeah, like, there's no clarity in thinking. And as I said, they just got bullied up front and in every facet of the game. And they just, when it came to execution, they were just fatigued and they just couldn't. And obviously, as we said, their game plan is all about suffocating the opposition, and Ireland not great at chasing games.
You've mentioned the word fatigued about five times now. It's a World Cup quarterfinal. Their last two games were against Samoa and Russia. Physically, there should be no reason for these players to be fatigued. So what is it then? How have they arrived at this stage that very early in the game, they look shattered?
They could be doing too much in the training park, which I would find probably maybe a bit... I'm not sure about that, because there's so much data, there's so much...
That is the big question, I think, that's... Maybe it will emerge in years to come as players start to reflect on this.
Maybe they're not doing enough on the training pitch. You know, maybe they're a bit undercooked, and they get, you know, when they reach the heights of match intensity that they drop. I don't know, but there is certainly, they have looked shell-shocked and tired at times, especially in this World Cup. And a lot was down to, you know, Japan, they probably lost the pressure moments. Mm. But also against Russia, they looked tired and they just looked...
The body language today just looked
to be over.
Now, I'm not saying it's purely physical. As I said, I think mentally they just possibly weren't at the races. And I don't know why I'm saying that, because it's a World Cup quarterfinal. Mm. But just the thought process and the execution and some of the plays today. Just
a chance for yet another try for the All Blacks, and they go over in the corner. It is Jordy Barrett this time who goes over in the corner. It is going to be certainly the most points Ireland have ever conceded at a World Cup. They are 46-14 down, conceded 43 against Argentina, I think it was, 4 years ago. Generally, you go back through the quarterfinal records, it's not very good. And this, because it's the All Blacks, maybe humiliation is too strong a word, but expectations were so high going into this tournament for this to be the way it ends. Not in any sort of heroic failure, not in some grandstand second half comeback, not in a first 20 minutes where Ireland tore into them and built up a lead and gave themselves chances. You do wonder, has something catastrophically gone wrong in the build-up that they've just massively misjudged something? I know what you're saying, that the level of data, the level of talent that is in that backroom team, it seems impossible to imagine.
Yeah, I don't know whether it was maybe a pivot shift in terms of what they were trying to do. I know it wasn't seen like that, but there was talk of potentially during the Six Nations that the players were maybe allowed play a bit more, or that the management or the people wanted them to play more. But there seems to be, for whatever reason, there hasn't been the same clarity of... same clarity of thought process and how, what they're doing and how they're trying to do it. They've looked kind of in the middle of a team that want to play but then don't, and then, you know, they've kind of fell just in 2019. I think they've fallen between two stools there. Yep. That they've wanted to expand but they haven't either, you know.
It is over. The final whistle is gone. The conversion was missed, but New Zealand have beaten Ireland by 46 points to 14. Yet again, Ireland crash out of a Rugby World Cup at the quarter-final stage. There was some emotional scenes already on the sideline with Rory Best, who's played for the final time for Ireland, and particularly there, Joe Schmidt, walking down from his position high up in the stand and shaking hands with every Ireland supporter as he walked down through the stands. Obviously, enormous respect, rightly so, for Joe Schmidt in this country, for what he achieved, for bringing Ireland to a Grand Slam, what he achieved with Leinster from right when he started. He's got a wry smile on his face after shaking hands with Steve Hansen. His team have been utterly outclassed today. And this is going to be a defeat for an awful lot of these players that they're never going to come back from, that they're going to be talking about this in 20 years, that this World Cup was a huge missed opportunity. And a game like this, like the mistake level, the unforced error count, I'm not sure if Ireland have ever had a performance like that.
Yeah, and from, you know, senior guys, you know.
That's like, it. Yeah. Sexton and Murray were arguably two of the most guilty.
Yeah, and Rob Kearney at the back as well. You know, that try directly comes from, you know, probably him running the wrong line. He's too tight, too flat, where there's a 2v1 on the edge. You know, if he catches that in the space he's supposed to be in, it's probably a walk-in try. Those things are, you know, they're kind of unforgivable at this stage of a tournament with so much on it, you know.
Just from a forwards perspective, like the New Zealand pack on a lot of occasions, you know, simply just took the ball up and there was always that gaining the yards and it was always a soak Irish defence. And it's the whole defence structure from Ireland just didn't seem like, for, I think, Aaron Smith's first try when you have Furlong, I think it was Henderson, all folding round the ruck and leaving a massive gap, leaving Rory Best to do a soakaway tackle and Aaron Smith scoring on the post. Just no connection between them. And I think the defensive structure somehow has kind of lapsed in this tournament. But just the forwards running onto the ball, the difference between the likes of Kieran Reid and Savea are running onto the ball and always having that support option, but running at pace, whereas the likes of Henderson catching the ball at standing still, not having the support, just slowing everything down. And it showed, it was time after time the New Zealand forwards came at them and they kept making yards after yards, and it just made it easy for the likes of Mwanga to run the show.
Yeah, you touch on maybe some of the individual mistakes. So there was a knock-on very early on from Robbie Henshaw that ultimately starts the spell of possession that ends with the first try. The first try is a few players get attracted to the ball.
Yeah.
Henderson maybe the most guilty. Rory Best didn't cover himself in glory. The All Blacks are clinical.
Best is after making a tackle there, and there's
it's not his fault.
There's no connection from the people around. Like Henderson should be turning his head once and going, "Okay, Bessie's stuck there. Right, well, I need to make sure that I hold this space." If all Henderson needs to do is hold the space on the blind side of the ruck and not overfold, then there's no hole for him to run in. Mm. Like he won't run there. The ball goes out to space. Like
that's what I mean. That mistake, right? Is that because it's the All Blacks because of the pressure? Is that
that's a system error? Yeah, it's, and it's about connection between you know that line of defence and you know maybe Best should have said to Henderson not to fold round because all of them just folded round and
it's a lack of communication and a lack of communication and connection within your system that creates. To that, and if you were analysing that on Monday, which they won't be, you'd be like, Henderson, turn your head once. That's all you need to do. Mm. You didn't turn your head. That leads to a try. You can't do that. You know, like he hasn't looked up. He has no connection even with the people in front of him. Usually, you'd send maybe two around the corner. There's two guys have already gone. He hasn't even noticed that. He's just head down. I'm getting up. I'm overworking into position.
We look about Irish defence and then the Aaron Smith second try. You know, Stockdale comes in.
Well, even before that, the second try starts with Sexton missing touch.
Yeah.
Richie Mwanga with this miraculous piece of play to keep the ball in.
Yeah.
But they're inside their own goal line at that stage. Yeah. They build it all the way up the pitch. And as you say then, like Jacob Stockdale probably makes three defensive mistakes.
Yeah. In the build-up to
that. First, he misses the tackle.
Yeah.
Then he puts himself in an offside position as they're on the line. Has this almost brain freeze where he realizes he's in an offside position and instead of getting back, he stands there and just lets the player go through.
He realizes that he's at fault and he kind of puts his arms up kinder and then realizes then, too late then, that
by putting his hands up, he's actually let the player through.
He's just nullified it at source and, you know, maybe he might, I think it would have just been a penalty at best.
As you said yourself, if you're going to cheat, do it.
Yeah.
Like, come off your feet, kill the ball, kill the play, accept what's coming. You know, like in terms of the outcome at the end, you know, it's not really, you know, you need to accept if you're going to do that, you do it.
And once again, we're referring to Irish errors.
Yes.
You know, and as we said, yes, New Zealand were fantastic today in everything, in all execution, but it all came again from errors on the Irish kind of thinking process.
And that's Ireland 17-0 down a quarter of the way through the game, as you say, pretty much all self-inflicted. They made very little headway anytime Ireland got a spell of possession. There was a mistake somewhere, like the amount of knock-ons was just endless, it felt. And then the third try, which really killed the game completely, half an hour, and this time it's Johnny Sexton and Rob Kearney.
Yeah.
Probably the two most experienced players on the pitch. Middle of the field, what looks like the most simple ball. We've seen Johnny Sexton play this pass a million times to Rob Kearney.
The movement is brilliant, and what they've created is exactly what they're trying to do. But Kearney runs the wrong line. He's too tight, too flat, where if he has literally a foot more depth and a foot more width, he is clean through a hole where he can play Keith Earls on a simple 2v1. He either scores or Keith Earls either scores. And that was fundamental of the whole breakdown today. That they did everything well up to that point, and then that one mistake costs them, kills the game. Same, they won a penalty where Sexton's kicking the ball into touch. He's gone, right, I'm going for this. Hmm. He's backed himself, hasn't executed. But
Rory Best
well
is literally
point.
Drawing the ball,
yeah,
preparing to take.
Yeah,
and then again, at the end of the first half, they're in the very precious time spent in the New Zealand 22, and Omani gives away a penalty for leading with the shoulder, and that's kind of the end of the first half. And whereas going in 22-0, it could have been 22-5, 22-7, because he let to go to the corner.
Yeah.
But that just kind of summed up the Irish kind of thought process and stupid unforced errors.
53106 is the text number. We're live on all our social channels. We'll be talking to Keith Wood and Zinzam Brook. We will bring you the reaction as it comes through as well from Tokyo, where Ireland have been beaten 46-14 by the All Blacks. The scenes on the pitch in the last few minutes were Rory Best was getting a guard of honour from both squads individually in honour of his test career. He finishes up and the Irish players just looking absolutely shell-shocked. One of those, and look, you've both suffered defeats throughout your career, and there's different types of defeats. It's not a close-run thing where it's devastation. The Irish players have already probably had 20 minutes, half an hour to consider this, but considering what these players thought last November, like, they had the world at their feet. They were genuinely being talked about as being the best side in the world right then. Regardless of it being November internationals, the standard Ireland had showed in 2018 meant everybody could legitimately think this is a side that can contend at a World Cup. Like, on a personal level, for those players.
Oh, it's devastating. For someone like, we spoke about, for someone like Rory Best, who's like a gentleman of Irish rugby. He's been such a servant to Ulster and to Ireland. Real sound, honest, genuine bloke. That is, like, that's devastating for him. You know, his wife was up on social media, Jodie's out there with their kids and stuff. It's a devastating way for someone like him to end. But, you know, previous World Cup, you know, same for Paulie. Paulie gets carried out, you know, not being able to finish. That's the unfortunate endings of sport sometimes. But, you know, that for me is probably one of the toughest things today.
But you look at that November game, went on and beat New Zealand. New Zealand reacted, and they reacted quickly and decisive. And, you know, five or six of that team who lost in Dublin in November were out. And, you know, the likes of the two wingers, Rhys and Bridge, weren't even in the squad. Mm. You know, the starting props for New Zealand in that game, I think that two of them were playing Mitre 10 last weekend. So they were very, you know, Hansen saw, okay, I've got a year to turn this round.
Yeah, he was cutthroat in where, and you probably look at potential selection issues in terms of Joe this year.
Yeah, well, talk about that then, because
he could have potentially been a bit more cutthroat.
Well, that is one of the questions that we're going to have to try and answer now, because almost there's two Joe Schmidt eras. There's the last year and there's the previous 10 years of success with Leinster and with Ireland. But the last year, right, 12 of that team that started today started against the All Blacks. Could be put forward as a positive. There's continuity. The players know how to get it done. The players who came in were Robbie Henshaw,
but the problem
Conor Murray, Ian Henderson.
Yeah, you're looking at form, though, are
but
they?
That's what I'm asking. That actually, you could have named that starting 15 before the start of the tournament.
Yeah.
Yet Ireland didn't play well in the four games so far, yet still it was the exact same starting 15. Jordan Larmour on the bench, Andrew Conway not in the 23.
Yeah.
Or was it a case actually that the players who did come in and got minutes here and there didn't do enough to change his mind? Or do you think it was a case that no matter what any player did, Joe Schmidt was never going to change that starting 15?
I think probably the reliance on the tried and tested has has kind of unraveled throughout this year, and the fact that he wasn't as cutthroat as he could have been. Now, Joey Carberry's injury probably curtails that, in the sense that he might have liked to get him maybe potential game at 15 to have him on the park.
Where he was cutthroat was with Devon Toner. And you know, as I said, bringing John Klein in, he wasn't even on the 23 today.
No.
So I still think that was a poor decision.
Yeah, and I think you look at someone like, you know, Larmour, he played well when he came on today. He obviously didn't excel when he came on against Japan, but you look at, like, and the form and the consistent form of the last 2.5 years of someone like Andrew Conway, you know, he can feel very much hard done by this reliance on the tried and tested, particularly today. You know, someone like him can feel aggrieved, in the sense that I could have made a difference, and that's probably the one thing that he's going to come in for a lot of flack for, I would say, over the next when people are reviewing this over the next couple of weeks.
Do you think that can seep into the 15 that are nailed on as well, that there's a little bit of resting on your laurels, that there's not that intense pressure that should be in any squad, that it feels like is in the All Black squad, like you talk about the turnover there, that nobody's protected, that actually within a camp, especially when they're there for so long, that within a camp it does seep in after a while of, you know what, I've been training out of my skin for the last 3 months. When I've been on the pitch, I've taken my chances, yet still I'm not getting a chance. So it's poor for squad morale, but also for the guy who's actually in the jersey in the team. He's thinking, well, actually, you know what? This guy's been playing brilliant. Still on the play, whatever.
Yeah, and look, there has been that. And as you said, before the tournament started, you could have picked probably that 15, and you would have been right with that analysis. I think they have been safe in some selections, and they have been going on. You know, Carney's been the big talking point, and over the years he's been fantastic for Ireland, that kind of safety blanket for the back three in defence mainly and sometimes in attack. But I think the time now is probably coming along to say, right, we need to start reevaluating this, and we need a new mindset, and we need it, you know, now with this cyclical 4-year period finishing and Mike Catt coming in, I think the timing is right now to try and shake some things up, and with Andy Farrell as head coach, he's got a big job now. Because
is Andy Farrell not massively tarnished because of his association with this?
Well, that's irrelevant because he's got the gig. Yeah. So you know,
is he starting very much on the back foot though?
But he can start afresh. He can completely rejuvenate him. You know, it's a new way. Firstly, they're going to be bringing in a completely different way of attacking. With Mike Catt, he'll be leading the attack. He would attack quite differently to how Joe would probably be a bit less unstructured, and would have a more emphasis on multi-phase. But like, his job is to adapt and to change himself. He's the boss. He needs to, you know, take the learnings from this and try and move forward, that if he's in situ in 4 years time, that this doesn't happen again.
I'd like to see, if we're talking about transition now going forward, a little bit more kind of heads up rugby in terms of less kind of robotic pre-planned kind of 4 or 5 multi-phase plays, and just a bit more heads up in going, look, where is the space, just more analysis from the actual ball carrier and the guys left and right of him. Because at the moment I think they're making poor decisions, and is that because of preordained moves that they must carry out? Because if they don't carry out, they're going to get in trouble for. I don't know.
Did Joe Schmidt send out the most one-dimensional side at that World Cup?
I'm not sure.
Of the elite teams, of the Tier 1, including Japan. Promoted.
Yeah, probably he very much stuck to script in terms of his, as Swift just said, in terms of his 3-4 phase power plays, and, you know, his rigidness around multi-phase. He very much stuck to script on that.
Yeah.
He didn't particularly adapt a whole lot, and that's his style, and that's what he did. I think that's probably outlasted 6 months, because teams did pick up that you win a physical battle, you have a go at their breakdown, and then I think most importantly, teams figure out you win the aerial battle and that kick battle, then you have Ireland under a huge amount of pressure.
But what you see, look at the New Zealand game plan today. You know, when they're carrying the ball, the ruck is the last option they want.
Yeah.
Whereas in Ireland, it's almost preordained. We set a ruck, we build multi-phase, then there's spaces. Whereas New Zealand, they see a ruck as almost the last option to have. They're always looking for the space. They're always looking for that offload, whether it be off the ground or whether it be a soft shoulder. And that's where the game is going.
Yeah.
You're listening to Off the Ball on this Saturday afternoon. I'm joined in studio by Johnny Murphy and Michael Swift. 53106 is the text number. We're live on all our social channels as well. Do get your comments in. We will get to those in a few moments. We've Zinzan Brook and Keith Wood coming up as well. But we're picking through the wreckage, really, of Ireland's World Cup hopes, because Ireland are out of the Rugby World Cup, beaten 46-14 by the All Blacks. Let's hear from Joe Smith.
To give the All Blacks a 22-point head start, you just can't do that, can you?
No, and it wasn't just the 22 points. It was all the ball we gave them. I think we missed touch on penalties for us to get good field position three times, and it just meant that that we were chasing our tail, and they had so much ball in our 22 and our half in that first half that it was very, very tough going.
And I suppose when you do drop those balls, it's hard to get your attacking game into effect, isn't it?
Yeah, we had a few chances in that first half. I think, one of the tries, the third try that the All Blacks scored, we had a really good gap on the inside. We just didn't quite play it. We just didn't quite have a feel. We've been a little bit flat all season, which is disappointing. Maybe we were great last year and we just maybe come off the top of that and haven't quite been where we wanted to be all year.
I suppose you would have heard Rory's words, being a legend and what he's done for Irish rugby. He mentioned you, 6 years, 3 Six Nations, the first time ever beating your Blacks at home. Once again, Coach, I'll let you have the last word.
Look, I'd just like to thank my players, and I'd like to thank these supporters that that followed us all over the place. Rory's led the team incredibly well, and Paul O'Connell before him, and it's been a privilege for me.
It's been a privilege to watch you go to work. Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, KT.
All right, that is Joe Schmidt there talking on the pitch after one of the lowest moments, unquestionably, of his career. His side were thoroughly dismantled by the All Blacks, 46-14. It was a game that, as was said there, it was 22-0 inside half an hour. Ireland were dead and buried by then. Text in saying, Nathan, there's an elephant in the room here that keeps coming up every 4 years. Skill level. Our Ireland as skillful as the All Blacks? Do they have the same skill level?
No.
Why?
Then I'm robbing someone else's analogy. It's like people in hurling in Kilkenny, when you go, everyone, their hurls are, that famous picture of hurls outside mass. It's the same in New Zealand, except it's rugby balls. They basically grow up playing rugby and that's it. They play cricket in the summer. It's their main sport. They have no, it's just ingrained in them. We don't have that skill level in Ireland. I don't think we ever had. That's just the reality. They are probably one of, if not the most skillful nation, because it's in their nature. It's a massive work on for everyone involved to try and get that, and a huge emphasis on coaching a skill-based way and trying to move forward. But I don't think they're not, and it was shown massively today.
Text in from Stephen Kildare. Nathan, please explain why you are tabloid and negative towards Joe Schmidt. What's your problem? Look what he's done for Ireland and for Leinster. As I said, I think there's two Joe Schmidt eras, one of which that over the coming weeks and months we will very much get into how he transformed Irish rugby in many ways and the success he brought to Ireland and to Leinster. But we have to look at the last year, because Joe Schmidt himself spoke about this World Cup as being the end of the cycle of everything of the last 10 years coming together, and it has fallen unbelievably flat. And we're all asking questions as to how this could happen. The not changing enough of the players, perhaps, or maybe not being too set in his team. Like, did that come home to roost today in terms of Robbie Henshaw probably nowhere near enough minutes under his belt, but thrown in because Chris Farrell hadn't got enough opportunities earlier in the year? Like, the world and his mother knew that Jacob Stockdale had defensive issues, yet was sort of nailed on. There was never really any questions about Stockdale's position on the wing. So, like, does that suggest to you that the backroom staff weren't asking enough questions, or does it all fall on Schmidt?
I'd say it probably falls on them as a collective, but ultimately the buck stops with the head man. I think that is the biggest thing, is sticking with the tried and tested is probably going to be the issue. And as we've already spoken out, someone like Andrew Conway missing out. Chris Farrell you know, I think they probably end up picking the best centre partnership today. And to be fair, I don't think either of them, you know, I think they did okay. But yeah, certainly there is a sense in the last 6 months that he probably wasn't as cutthroat as he previously was throughout his time in Ireland. And I think that's something that he probably needs to look at overall.
I think it's game plan. I think, as I said, when they won the Six Nations, everyone kind of moved on, and it seemed like, whereas everyone progressed, it seemed like Ireland has regressed since that Six Nations victory, the Grand Slam. And, you know, remember a year ago when they tried Robbie Henshaw at fullback, and you thought, oh, there could be some tinkering here, well, 18 months out, whatever. But then it kind of, nothing really happened of that. It was tried for one game and then kind of binned, and then it kind of went back to script.
And I think that's probably an issue. He tried Robbie at 15 and it didn't work out, so automatically he returns to Rob script, Kearney, yeah. Because it's, well, I've tried that, hasn't worked, right, we're back here. And I think that's probably that's a really good point in the sense that was probably a downfall, rather than Larmour, Conway, other guys that are in form at that time, giving them a go.
It would have been interesting to if Robbie had been amazing at fullback, got man of the match.
Yeah.
Then where would the road have taken us?
Oh, World Cup semi-final. And another thing, and how much of this is within Joe Schmidt's control, I'm not quite sure. But, and correct me if you want to add players to this list, but in Ireland's unbelievable 2018, you would have said Ireland had four undoubtedly world-class players in Tadhg Furlong, James Ryan, Conor Murray, and Johnny Sexton, who were arguably as good as anybody in their position. Have any of those four got to that level this year?
Well, James Ryan undoubtedly is at that level, and he is world-class. He will, you know, be Ireland's fulcrum for the next 10, 12 years. Amazing. I think the 9-10 axes hasn't achieved what it has in recent years. I think Conor Murray, with the injury that he had and all the talk about the time spent out from it, I think he hasn't been the same player since he's come back. Whether he needs a rest now, I don't know, because at the moment, even if you go to his kind of set, what he has been renowned for, his sniping, his box kicks, the box kicks today, there was always going three or four metres too far and allowing the likes of Severis and Bridge to attack again. So, you know, Furlong, I think, is at a strong tournament. And he is, you know, undoubtedly going to be there as well at the fulcrum as a front row. But I think the 9-10 axis are his biggest kind of problem. And now is now the time. Now with Sexton, I don't know. With Carberry, are they going to give him more game time in the next 12 months? Is Farrell going to see, OK, now we need to start spreading out the load a bit more in the 10 axis? Because when Sexton goes, you want Carberry to at least have a bit more kind of game plan in big matches.
You do.
And we've been saying that for a couple of years now.
We'll get into looking ahead and what's next, but you do almost worry, because this has gone so poorly, that Andy Farrell, and thinking about the next cycle, the Six Nations is important for Andy Farrell. He needs to start on the right foot. He can't really be experimenting. He can't go, you know what, we're doing things differently. The four-year plan is in.
Yeah.
He needs to have a successful Six Nations. We'll get into that. Let's go back to Tokyo, though, because Rory Best has played his final game for Ireland. A tough day for him and his teammates. 46-14, the final score. Let's hear from the Irish captain.
A tough night at the office, needless to say. Do you feel you've just off-balance all night?
I suppose, firstly, I'd just like to thank this unbelievable crowd. The Irish, as always, it started off with an incredible atmosphere. They were brilliant. But look, the All Blacks were fantastic tonight. We felt we prepared well all week. We felt we had a game plan. We felt we had enough in our army to beat them. They just started off, come out of the blocks hard at us, put us in the back foot, and, you know, like good sides do, they never let us get off that again.
You had to make a lot of tackles in their first half. Do you think fatigue was a factor in the back end of that game?
Yeah, I think they were just really, really clinical. They didn't let us get on the front foot. And look, this is a front foot momentum game, especially in knockout rugby. And the boys that are here will look back at this and they'll have to see how to get better. But Look, I think just for this, right now, you have to give enormous credit to the All Blacks. They were fantastic tonight.
14 years in that green jersey. 124 caps you've given to it. I'll leave the last word for you, Cap.
Yeah, look, I've loved every minute of it.
Take your time, take your time.
Yeah, look, I've loved every minute of it. Like I said at the start, the crowd have been fantastic. The support that I've got from home, from the fans when we're at home, when we're away, my teammates, the coaching staff, and probably in particular Joe as well, who's moving on. I think he brought Irish rugby and probably my game in particular to a different level when he came here. And a lot of credit must go to him, and just a massive thanks to him. And I suppose good luck to Kieran and the All Blacks next week.
Well done. Thanks, Kev.
Cheers.
Yeah, that is Rory Best talking on the pitch in Tokyo directly after Ireland's 46-14 defeat. Obviously given a huge ovation by what was a massive Ireland crowd. Everyone managed to get in for a day that didn't go the way anybody would have wanted from an Irish point of view. But listen, as devastated as everybody is, I think Rory Best deserves that sort of ovation for everything he's done for Irish rugby over the last 14 years. We are going to get into lots more analysis. Michael and Johnny are going to stick with us for a few more minutes and try and figure out exactly what has gone wrong for Irish rugby over the last year. 53106 is the text number at Off the Ball on Twitter. We should mention that if Ireland had won this game, it was only England in the semi-finals, because England were also hugely impressive today. They beat Australia by 40 points to 16, so it will be the All Blacks against England in a semi-final that many people really feel is the final. That feels like it's going to be probably the biggest game of the tournament. In the Premier League, which we will focus on later on in the afternoon, Everton 1-0 up against West Ham with the second half just getting underway. Bernard with the goal for Everton. Quick break. All right, you're welcome back to Saturday's Off the Ball. We are reflecting on Ireland's exit from the Rugby World Cup. If you've somehow missed it, Ireland were well and truly battered by the All Blacks. 46-14 was the score. They were 17-0 down after the opening quarter. Ireland made mistake after mistake, and they were punished again and again by the All Blacks. So yet again, Ireland failed to get past the quarterfinal stage. 53106 is the text number at Off the Ball. On Twitter, we're going to talk to Keith Wood and to Zinzan Brook in the next hour. We'll be across to Tokyo as well to check in with our man Owen Sheehan, who'll be at the press conference, Joe Schmidt's final press conference as Ireland manager, and we'll hear from some of the players as well, who no doubt are absolutely devastated. Johnny Murphy and Michael Swift are alongside me in studio. I've been trying to pick through exactly how this went wrong, and I was talking off air there, Johnny, about a day in studio with yourself and Andy Dunn. Mm-hmm. Andy, as far as I know, is in Iceland at the moment, which is a terrible shame. If I was Andy, I'd be flying back home right now and I would be gloating. I know he won't do that because he's too much of a gentleman and he'd be devastated as a proud Irishman with what's happened. But he has been very much to the fore in saying that Ireland's style of play is too attritional, that in a World Cup, when the games are coming quick and fast, that fatigue will become a major factor. Injuries would be a factor. It turned out that it wasn't injuries were a factor, but also maybe it would be a little bit too predictable. I think the row ye had, when was that?
It was Six Nations? The England game, yeah.
During this year's Six Nations. Yeah. You were more taking the point of, regardless of what you think, what Joe Schmidt thinks is, this is the game plan. Yeah. It won us a Grand Slam. It helped us beat the All Blacks. I'm not going to change it. You'd wonder how the management team weren't aware of what Andy was saying, or do you think actually they were totally aware of how attritional that game plan was and they still decided this is the best way forward for us?
Yeah, it's his style. That's how he played for Ireland. That was the style, and to a lesser extent with Leinster, that's his style. It's based on power plays, based on rucking, based on clearing over and pass the ball, left and right barrels as they're called. That's his style. So it's like Pat Lam or Rob Penny have a style in 2-4-2. They play, that's their style. Like Stuart Lancaster has a more...
Does Steve Hansen have a style? Do great coaches have a style, or do they change their style?
They have a basic structure that they will they'll stick to, but then there's a huge reliance. You'll probably find that Steve Hansen is extremely reliant on transition and basically being able to adapt in a split second to turn over ball and play. And I think that's probably, you know, he certainly is an offload coach like that. Because you can see, as you've already said, Swifty, there's always an option. Someone always runs an offload line. They're looking to get their hands free. Their styles, that's what you have. And I think that has probably maybe wouldn't have come to roost so much if he probably hadn't been stuck with the tried and tested in terms of selection. Maybe there might have been a point of difference there if he had changed up selection, maybe more so. But I think it's his style and structure, and that's how he plays.
And do you think there's a bit of a fear factor as well with Joe and the players? And in hearing guys who coached under him, is there that fear of making mistakes, if in doubt, you know what, resource, because we're going to hold on to the ball and we're going to build more phases?
Yes, definitely. And I think that then creates issues if he did or tried to change, because guys might go, hold on a second, I'm not sure I'm going to call his bluff here. I'm not going to be the one to throw that offload on a 50-50 and then get pulled up on a Monday or Tuesday morning. That then is the problem if you do want to change styles, because people believe that persona. So you're like, well, okay, that's all well and good, but I'll tell you what, I'll leave someone else try it and then I'll roll in behind it.
Do you know what though? Changing styles, you can't do overnight either. Yeah. Look, just give an example, when Pat Lamb came to Connacht, it took a 2-year process of you'll have one game plan for match day, but we would be practicing that 2-4-2, say, 6 months in the season before that, before even looking to bring it into a game. And just that 2-on-1 skill set, day in, day out. So you can't just flick the switch and go, do you know what, we're going to tear that game plan up and we're going to play a different way next week. Yeah. It takes a good 6-7 months of training to implement that.
But did he not have that chance? Did he not have that chance at the end of that All Blacks game last year, where stock was never higher, to go, do you know what, this has got us this far, I need to change some things.
Yeah, he did.
We're going to sacrifice the Six Nations.
Yeah, he did. But the problem is, there has to be a full belief in the players in that perspective, that if two games do go to complete, you know, do have a complete meltdown, that it's not, what are you doing here, Swifty? Why are you not there in your left barrel? And Swifty goes, well, I was chasing an offload line. And he goes, don't chase an offload line. That means your changing of the script goes out the window, because lads are like, actually, hold on.
Different mindset.
I'm not doing that.
Our rugby coverage brought to you by Vodafone, Team of Us, Everyone In. Aidan in Swords has texted into 53106. Lads, do you think the Irish players were starting to get tired of playing Joe Schmidt's rugby the last year or so, and that's why we're not performing? I'll sort of slightly change that question to, do you think the players were slightly getting tired of Joe Schmidt? That actually there's a certain shelf life for that sort of intensity of coaching. I'll be honest, the second I heard the players were going into camp in the second week in June, I was a bit concerned, because all you hear is it's non-stop. There's no break. Mentally, you've got to be on it day in, day out. That actually it's all been just too much. That regardless of game plan, everything else, the number one thing that killed Ireland was they looked shattered.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure about the going into camp thing, because they did refresh it of all the years. They were in for 4 or 5 days and they were out. They had weeks off. They all went away together, but they were given holiday time. Like, it wasn't as they were in and that was it. They were gone. He very much did balance that, I think, quite well. And I'm not sure about whether they got sick of playing. There's so much respect for Joe Smith in Ireland that I think that would be very... I'm not sure you'd get tired of working. It can take its toll mentally, obviously, but I'm not sure what you think.
Like I said, physically, like, I don't think that was the issue. I think mentally today, I think fatigue in the thought process and the execution just wasn't there today. And as I said, maybe there's that fear factor and just programmed. If you're programmed to do is play rugby a certain way, it's very hard to say, flick the switch and go, do you know what? We're 20 points down now. We can't play this way. We have to play this way. But we've never... We haven't practiced playing this way, So how do you play this way?
Yeah.
You know, you're staring down a barrel then and that's all against the world's best team in transition.
Yeah.
Your post-match analysis seems apologetic and sympathetic. Why not call it as it is? A shambles of a World Cup finished off by an embarrassing collapse. At least seven of the starting 15 should never wear an Irish jersey again, including Johnny Sexton, says Pat in Listoon Varna.
But I don't think we're criticising what happened and how it happened. We're trying to figure out, our job here is to try and figure out why it happened. Like,
Johnny Sexton's the world player of the year.
Yeah, he was the worst player of the year 6-7 months ago. A small bit of a lack of form over the last thing. So it's very hard to drop your tallies, man. People were talking about last week how clinical he was and concise in his game management last week. It was kind of killer instinct. It was, let's just go from A to B and then we end up with our bonus point and it's done, you know?
Can I quickly go to the lineup again today? And look, Ireland won a fair bit of ball today, but the usability factor was pretty poor. Mm. And they kept going to Peter Omani. And now I know he's a great lineup operator, but they kept going to him. And I just think just the amount of pressure on that lineup in the whole tournament, I think, has been a big factor. And we know how much Ireland love set phase attack, and they score a lot of tries off first phase attack. And I just think with the likes of Henderson calling the lineouts, along with Ryan, that cohesion just wasn't there during the World Cup.
One area where maybe Ireland haven't been as strong over the last couple of years is in the back row. And I wonder how much that has hampered what Joe Schmidt likes to do, because Ireland do bring the ball into contact probably more than any other side. And like Sean O'Brien, Jamie Heaslip, Dan Levy, Jack Conan are all rampagers when they want to be. And all of them, if it wasn't for injuries, could well have been at that World Cup. Even Heaslip, at his age, if he'd managed to stay injury-free, would have hoped that this would have been his swan song. That Ireland didn't really have any of those type of players in that back row.
I think Dan Levy is probably the one name there that you're like, he was such a massive loss and probably underrated to the extent that, you know, he hasn't featured at all over the last while. And when he did, it was a brief cameo and then he's out again. I think he was a huge, huge loss. And people underrated how good he was and how important he was. And I think of all the players, he's probably the biggest loss.
And briefly on that, I think it's even more important because the way Ireland have played, in that it is a war of attrition and it is multi-phase, sometimes you need that type of Billy Vunipola just to, even on slow ball, to get the ball and actually gain 2 yards over the gain line to then create quick ball. Mm. And because of that game plan Ireland do have against multi-phase, they don't have that type of player to create that quick ball.
Like Sean O'Brien and Levy give you that go forward majority of the time. And then the dark arts that Dan Levy has, like he's an exceptional rugby player. But I think those probably injuries there, you know, if you wanted to go in, you could have a back row of Conan, who was out there. You could have Conan, CJ at 6. You know, a Josh Van der Fire or Peter O'Mahony at 7. That gives you real ball carrying across. It's like it's as close to a back row of Heaslip, O'Brien and Levy, you know, like to manage that. So that is probably something that they lacked and were unlucky in it. The one area that you could say that injuries probably has affected them.
Yeah.
One last text before I let you go from Philip in Cork. After 4 years of hype, delusion, arrogance and nauseating superiority, aided and abetted by a compliant and indulgent Irish media populated with ex-teammates and apologists, Ireland's Rugby World Cup is an abject failure. Maybe Ireland are just useless. Call it as it is for once, rather than apologise and indulge rugby as usual. I think a lot of Irish people will be happy to see their arrogance take a battering as well as the team.
Well,
that viewpoint
very well
is
written.
Clearly out there.
Yeah.
But look, the European, you know, the success of the provinces, you know, you were talking about it, you know, it has, you know, Irish rugby has been on a really dominant front, and it's just a real shame that at the pinnacle of the tournaments, Ireland just don't perform at World Cups, and it's. But I, you know, there is.
Can we do anything about that? So we are now exactly 4 years away, where the new cycle starts today.
Yeah.
So is there something mentally wrong with Irish rugby players?
You need full buy-in from everyone on that. So Eddie Jones is a case in point. There was talk of him, people, you know, him getting the sack after 2008, Six Nations, all that. it was basically just, this is what I'm going to do, back me, and there was, that's it, look at where they are now. And I think that's something that you'd have to look at. People always, and it's very Irish to say, right, you know, after a string of four or five games or a bad Six Nations, right, he's out, change it, it all needs to be changed. And then we end up in the same position regardless. So, you know, I think the lads, they know they have underperformed. They've underperformed again. That's going to haunt them. And that's the reality. There's no point dressing this up as, you know, if this happened or that happened. They didn't perform when it really came to roost in the World Cup. And 2019 is going to be remembered for that. Mm. And that the Six Nations going to be remembered for it. And the signs were there. And not enough change probably was affected within that 6 or 7 month period. Mm.
All right, Johnny Murphy, Michael Swift, thank you very much for spending the morning with us. Wasn't the greatest morning of all time, it must be said. But listen, after your 4 years of hype, delusion, arrogance and nauseating superiority, I'm glad you've been brought back down to earth.
Hey, well, look, it's nice to be part of that rugby superiority.
I mean, Andy Dunn will be somewhere in Iceland.
Yeah, exactly.
What's that? He's flying in a private jet. He's going to arrive soon. 53106 is the text number at Off The Ball. A lot more analysis to come from Japan, where Ireland have been beaten 46-14. We're going to talk to Zinzan Brook and Keith Wood right after these. Yet more World Cup heartbreak for Ireland, beaten by the All Blacks 46-14 in Tokyo. We're going to have reaction from the Irish camp within the next hour. We'll talk to Zinzan Brook and Keith Wood as well. You're listening to Saturday's Off The Ball. Nathan with you through till 5 o'clock. Later in the hour, we'll have all the team news from the day's Premier League, where Everton still lead West Ham by 1-0 with 10 minutes remaining. But really, it is all about the rugby today. And that humiliation, as it's been described, for Ireland in Tokyo. The game really done and dusted inside half an hour, by which time the All Blacks have scored 3 tries. Mistake after mistake been punished by New Zealand, and Ireland yet again head out at the quarter-final stage. 53106 is the text number at Off The Ball. We're live on all our social channels. Keith Wood is on the line. Afternoon, Keith.
Hi, Nathan. How are you doing?
So, yet again, the quarterfinals have done for Ireland, 46-14. The All Blacks were at times brilliant, but Ireland, the sheer amount of mistakes that they made individually, collectively, is probably going to haunt this side for a long time.
I think it will. I think when you look back on it, we were still a bit flat, didn't show energy, don't seem to have the pace of some of the other teams. I know that sounds kind of unusual when we know that we've been on or in very good positions over the last couple of years. And I think when you end up looking at this game, you end up saying, well, okay, do I look at just today? Do I look at what's happened in the past? You know, do I look at what's going to happen in the future? And you get caught between all of them. And I think there is a recognition that for some of the players, it's the end of the road. For the coach, it is, because he's moving on. For the captain, he's moving on. They've had phenomenal days in the past in a green jersey. They just didn't have one of those days today. And it comes across as it was chastening to watch. I thought the All Blacks were phenomenal, and I really did. I thought they played an incredibly simplistic game. And it's one of the things that when I chat to kids when they go to play, their basic skills are of such an incredible standard that they work under pressure and they work at 100 miles an hour. And when they have their mind right and they're given a bit of space under which to try and use it in that fashion, I mean, they're a joy to watch, just not a joy when you're wearing a green jersey, you know.
And those basic skills were something that cost Ireland on countless occasions today. The amount of individual handling errors, knock-ons, Sexton failing to find touch on several occasions. You kind of touched on it there. Was that down to All Blacks pressure, or was that sort of a culmination of everything we've seen from Ireland this year where it just hasn't been quite right?
Yeah, I think it's both. And a lot of people have been saying, a lot of pundits, a lot of fans have been saying, look, we peaked in 2018 and we've been on a slide since then. We've definitely been on a confident slide since then. But equally, the game has changed quite a lot. even in that last 12 months. It's quite interesting how, and especially during this World Cup, and you can see it, the teams that play at a million miles an hour and have real gas in their side, like real gas, they are they're streets ahead, you know, and they're taking some of the risks, but their skills are standing up to scratch. I didn't think we put New Zealand under a huge amount of pressure today. So they were able to go and use their simple skills, simple tip-ons, simple pullbacks. But they played at almost 100% efficiency. And we really didn't. We were under huge pressure all the time. I mean, there was a couple of things that stood out for me today. I took notes, which I rarely do watching a match. But that they almost ignored Conor Murray. And they almost ignored Johnny Sexton when they had the ball. And they said, those guys aren't going to make that break, or they're not going to have that cut, because there was a flood of defenders to hit 12 and 13. There was a flood to hit the ball carriers. You know, they were kind of leaving gaps and making calculated guesses time after time. And I mean, that is as good as I've seen New Zealand play in I would say since the last World Cup. They had a sustained level of almost perfection for the game. That's impossible. And it's a lonely place, by the way. If you're wearing a green jersey on that field and you're not managing to hit your stripes, and you see this happening, you're almost powerless to try and do it. So that's tough.
It's interesting what you talk about there and over the last year and how the game has moved on and the speed and the pace that certain teams play with. And it comes back again to, it feels though Ireland are in a very similar place to where they were a year ago in terms of tactics and style, but confidence, they're nowhere near that level. Does that suggest again that Joe Schmidt should have done something quite different, that actually he should have used that All Blacks victory as almost an end point to take the confidence out of that, but to rethink things for final 12-month cycle?
I think that's a really easy thing to say in retrospect. And I know some people have been saying it beforehand. I don't know that it's as simple as that, actually. I really don't. And I think for Ireland to play, I think we got it fully exposed against Japan, right, a couple of weeks ago. And that is watching a team that has plotted that for 4 years and has taken 250 days together to try and say, this is exactly how we're going to play. They have entirely different ramifications for doing that or not. If Ireland had changed up everything and don't perform at all in the Six Nations, and I know we didn't have a good Six Nations, but if we lost everything, that is a huge knock on. So I think these things have to happen in almost a mindset change for a coach to do it. I don't know if that could have happened in the last year. I think there may have been a change of players. I did think we had a conservative selection for this game, and that may have offered a bit of a change, but whether it would have offered the right change, I don't know. I mean, I feel for the guys. I feel for Rory coming off the field. I know what that feels like too, which is pretty horrendous. And you don't get a chance to try and rectify it. That's another big frustration when you hang up your boots.
Is a World Cup, as you touch on that, Keith, is a World Cup exit different to any other type of defeat? As you say, there is no tomorrow with this. For a lot of players, a four-year cycle will begin and they know they won't be there at the end of it. Mentally, is it the hardest type of defeat to take?
I put it on the same level as losing a Lions series. It's a very lonely place, actually, at the end of it, because they may be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and it becomes incredibly difficult to be able to take. So I have huge sympathy for the players. It's interesting when you look back, and I've huge sympathy for Joe Schmidt, by the way. And that's why I said at the very start, I think we need to look at the past, we need to look at today, and we need to look at the future. And I think of what he has given us over the last number of years. He is, by every statistic that we have, the most successful Irish coach. He has today comes a cropper at a quarterfinal like all the other coaches, with the exception of Warren Gatland. And we didn't get out of the group that time in 99 when I played in that game in Lance, which was dreadful. That was a lonely place, I can tell you that too. But we look back at what has happened and we say, yes, this is fantastic. And what happened today tarnishes it today. And after today, we have to look back and say, okay, but look at what some of these guys have achieved over that period of time. Look at what our coach has achieved over that period of time. Do we then go and look into the future and say, how can we go still do well in Six Nations, which is our bread and butter, and we absolutely need it. It actually funds our whole game in Ireland. So how do we do well in the Six Nations over the next few years, and why? How do we get to a point where we peak at a World Cup and get that right? Because I can tell you that back in the past, with the exception of the last two World Cups, for the two World Cups before that, it was said that the All Blacks peaked in the middle of it. They didn't quite get their timing right. Well, they seem to have got their timing right today, because they were phenomenal today. So, but that's a much longer play. But that just shows you, I think it shows you the amount of difficulty that there is there to have in rugby. It isn't just as simple as we all like to think that it is, that you can actually put all your eggs into one basket. It doesn't work like that. But that doesn't take away from how unbelievably disappointing today was, and disheartening today was.
And part of the disappointment is that, like, this has been seen, and rightly so, as the most well-resourced Irish squad. That actually they've had this continuity of coach from the last World Cup. They have total control of their players, of playing minutes. We rarely, if ever, see many of these top players playing in the Pro 14, that they were well-rested, they were fresh, yet still we're in this exact same position of losing a World Cup quarterfinal. I know it's hard to put your finger on exactly what went wrong, and maybe we'll never fully know. But when you look over the last year, what mistakes do you think Joe Smith made?
That's a very pointed question in the manner in which you've put it. The build-up was okay. The end of it was very pointed. I felt we looked jaded. We haven't looked sharp. We haven't looked sharp on this World Cup. We seem to be confident against Scotland, but Scotland were absolutely abject. And after that, we just didn't seem, you know, we just didn't seem to be sharp at all, you know. And there was times we did really good things. There was times we didn't do good things. But I don't know. We look shook for an awful lot of it. I have that down on a couple of my elements. You know, our discipline, your discipline goes when you're under huge pressure. So I don't get kind of, but we look shell-shocked for large parts of that game. And a lot of that is to do with the pace as well. But I don't know, within the last year, and it is the point, and the questions will be asked anyway, are some of these guys too old? Have they been there too long? Are we relying too much on it? And I think there's elements of truth in it, but there's also a view that Joe would have looked at those players and said, they have delivered for me in the past, and when the pressure's come on, they have delivered for me, and that's the stall he decided to go and take. And you would have still expected a higher level of performance from them today, and we didn't perform anywhere near as well. So that's where the hindsight stuff comes in, because you could easily say, let's bring in five new guys. That's not the right thing to do a lot of the time, you know, 6 weeks out from a World Cup. That doesn't quite happen that in that fashion either. But I thought we were one paced today, and I thought they looked as if they had a whole variety of different gears they could go up when they wanted to.
And all those sort of individual errors that were made today, and again, you go back to so many knock-ons at crucial times, and even that third try in the mix-up between Sexton and Kearney. Do you put all that down to the sort of fatigue, that jaded feel around the squad?
Yeah, I think a huge amount is down to pressure. That game today was played at a monumental pace. Come ruck time, Aaron Smith was just zipping the ball away. It was there waiting for him. Every time he got there, it was ready for him to go. There was no digging for a ball at any stage. That pace puts everybody under pressure. You know, it really, really does. And we just didn't seem to be operating at that speed. And so jaded is a word, because I felt we have other teams are looking to play at a far, far faster pace. I don't know that we're not trying to play at that pace, but the one-out runners doesn't lead to very, very fast, unless you do it the way New Zealand did it, which is taking a pass, maybe a tip-on pass, but getting over the gain line, because like they're doing it when the ball is so fast, you'd expect it to go to the backs, but it goes to the forwards. They're running onto the ball. They're running onto a defensive line that is trying to get back into an onside position so that you lose that hard press that we often talk about. I mean, we were exposed by the speed of the game today. And I'll go back to what I said earlier on. It's a joy to watch a team play at that pace and with that level of skill. Their basic skills, their basic handling skills under pressure of the All Blacks, the speed at which they pass, the ease with which they pass, forwards, backs, doesn't seem to matter, is something that they are better at than anybody else in the world anyway, maybe with the exception of Japan. I think Japan are nearly there in terms of their handling capability, but not at the speed that they're playing at. I mean, it was imperious rugby. I mean, it was a joy to watch. It just wasn't a joy to watch as an Irish has-been or as an Irish fan. You know, you're looking at that and you're saying, God, this is just hard to watch. And then you're still saying, wow, that's a joy. And you see Dane Cole come off the bench and throw a ball to nothing, knowing that there'll be a guy running there. You know, that's still phenomenal rugby, you know. But it's just a really hard day then to go and watch and say, well, we had dreams for it. So we'd said beforehand, Ireland might win by 2 or 3 points or lose by 20, you know, because that was the... but we were hoping for New Zealand not to come as sharp as they were. But that's the sharpest I've seen them for 4 years.
What you were talking about there, about their approach to Conor Murray and Jonathan Sexton, and Jonathan Sexton is still the current World Player of the Year for another couple of weeks anyways, but was in that position rightly, and it was seen that Ireland had the best halfback partnership probably in the world a year ago. The fact that the All Blacks almost stood off them, does that suggest that they didn't feel they were the threat they were 12 months ago, or was it that actually they felt they could really make hay against Ringrose and Henshaw?
Well, if you look at even 12 months ago, we would play through a series of phases, get ourselves into a good position, and then there'd be a play that would be done on it. And by chasing after Johnny, that would leave a gap. So even if you got the hit in on him, that would leave a gap for somebody else to go through. That's what they read this time. So they're saying, let him go. We know that if he runs across the field like that, we don't have to follow him. And we can actually put somebody else to go on the guy outside him, and we keep one guy on the inside. And that happened 3 or 4 times today, and we never got through those phases. We didn't hold on to the ball long enough to play the style of play that we have been playing for the last number of years. So, of course he's a threat, but the one of the main reasons he's a threat is he drops people into a hole. He's opening up holes in the defensive line. He wasn't allowed to open up any today. And even the one that nearly opened, he got smashed just on the giving of the ball, which led to Beauden Barrett's try in the corner.
You can stay in the line, Keith, or you're more than free to go, because Zinzan Brook has joined us on the line. It's totally up to you.
I'll stay where I am. I'll stay where I am, of course.
Zinzan, thanks a lot for taking the call. Congratulations, firstly.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
A very happy New Zealand right now, I'd imagine. This was a game that had been built up for quite a while. There was a feeling probably a year ago this may well end up being a World Cup final. Were you surprised by the manner of the score in the end?
Yes, probably in reflection, yes. But I did sort of forecast that you were going to get an emphatic response from the Blacks. They would have been, they've obviously, you know, in a way, which I think I said that earlier on in the beginning of the week, that Ireland have actually helped reset our dial. And the All Blacks would have totally respected what Ireland have done in the past. And you don't get... you don't get to number one in the world easily. So when you set yourself a reputation like that, there, you got to try and live up to it. And unfortunately, Ireland were just on a receiving end and a very motivated All Black side that delivered and executed. And I'll take the words off Woody as well, that I've never seen the All Blacks play that well for that period of time. Yes, they probably had a little bit of a wobble. A slight wobble towards the end, but that first 40 minutes was just absolutely sublime.
Yeah, you're very much echoing, I think, what Keith was saying about the standard of that All Blacks performance. And when you talk about the pace of the game, it's a real credit, I guess, again, to Steve Hansen, who could have looked back on last year's defeat to Ireland and thought, all right, listen, it's the end of a long, hard season. It's a one-off game. We'll go back. We'll regroup. It actually feels as though that did spark a big change in him. I think there was 7 changes from the side that started in Dublin last year for the team today. Yeah. And also, like, the pace and intensity of that side, that it did spark a complete overhaul of how the All Blacks were probably approaching the last year.
Yeah, respectfully, you know, that's what you need to do. If you that would have been the strategy for not only the management side, but for an experienced All Black team that have a lot of players that have big reputations, and they don't want to get that ruined in a couple of games. But that for me was, and I was anticipating that was going to be not so much the root rugby, but the way that they actually controlled and the clinical performance in every aspect of the game here. There was very minimal mistakes through that period of time here, and I was anticipating that there would have been a little bit of a wobble from the Blacks in the first 20 minutes, but you know, they held it and sustained the pressure for the whole of that first 40 minutes, and then they continued just straight after half time. So, you know, when you put a marker down like that there, and it just seemed to, the bounce of the ball and the rub of the green went the All Black way, you know, the tiny little mistakes, you know, like Conor Murray, just I know it's only a small thing, but it counts as the consequences of how it unfolded when he just knocked that ball down when he was taking it from, I think it was from Henderson, the lock, and then just gave the position away. But look, the great thing is, you've got two amazing people, Joe Smith and Bestie. So, you know, one is the coach and one is a guy who's just going to retire. But, you know, he's both of them are fantastic. Their contribution in the last 3 to 4 years has absolutely just been emphatic and a great response. And, Hanson acknowledged that through his chat afterwards the game, which is very respectful.
Keith, it is hard to have a reasoned discussion about Joe Smith and Rory Best right now, and you touched on it that we can probably over the next couple of weeks look back in the last decade of Joe Smith and the influence he's had on Irish rugby from Leinster through to the success with Ireland, because right now what's fresh in our minds is the last 4 weeks and it where it hasn't quite happened. But he's going to feel it more than anybody. I think he's said it in his post-match press conference, which we'll hear shortly, like the scar of this for Joe Smith is going to last a long, long time.
Well, it is. I mean, and you'd often say it, who'd want to be a coach? And I never wanted to be a coach for the very simple reason that the losses, of which I had too many, I will comfortably say, in my career, but I felt every single one of them keenly, you know, and it's incredibly tough. And like, I think over the next few weeks, we'll have proper conversations on what he has done, on the changes that he has wrought onto Irish rugby, on some of the mistakes that were made as well. I think when you look back on it, you don't just look at the glory days, and you look at some of the other things and the lessons that will have to be learned going forward. We also have Farrell as one of our coaches presently, who will be the head coach. He's now the head coach, pretty much. And so he is going to have to pick up, and he's going to feel it very keenly. So what changes does he make? I know that some fans think, well, God, it's going to be more of the same. Well, it won't be, because each head coach will have a different view on how it should happen, how things should go, whether it is as detail-oriented or whether it is more instinctive or whatever it might be. You know that there'll be a different thing that'll come from this. You can't get past today for feeling how bad, like, however bad we feel, it's how bad are all those guys feeling. You know, I always think you need to go to a human side of it. They want, like, everything that they have done for the period of time is to try and get us to get the win. And we didn't get it. And we got eviscerated, actually, by an All Black team that hid every single strap.
Zinzan, I guess we never know how great a team is until a World Cup comes around and they get to prove themselves on these huge occasions where it is very much do or die. And there've been comparisons, of course, made with the 2011 team and the 2015 team, and because of maybe how the preparation went and some of the performances against Australia and South Africa, there were question marks over this All Black side. Does a performance like today quash all those questions and mean that you head into England next week feeling that this is another special crop of All Black players?
No, I think the I think they'll dust themselves off and they'll want to go again here. I don't think there won't be any court sessions at this stage after this performance here, because I watched the game with England this morning, and that was very comprehensive. It was that was well executed, and that England side here, and it's all about that timing and that running. And at the moment, I'd say that there's a confidence within that England camp, and Eddie Jones and his team have done a fantastic job. But the All Blacks won't make the mistake, and I'm sure England won't do it here. They'll actually prepare themselves for a full on this. For me, I would have anticipated that potentially should have been the final, just on the form of what I've seen in these games. But you know, with Wales and South Africa and Japan and the French, who knows? Because we haven't seen the French turn up as of yet, and they always do turn up at the World Cup, as the All Blacks will know. We've had a couple of times we've had our pants pulled down, and France have, I think they've been in three finals, if I'm not mistaken. Look, it's fantastic, but the All Blacks will just focus on this. Is just one part of the jigsaw that we put in place. There's two more to go, and to be recognised in the world of rugby, and you only remember it at the end when you win it. These guys here are a long way from doing that at this moment.
Zinzan, thanks a lot for taking the call. Enjoy the celebrations.
Cheers, thank you. Cheers.
Well done, Zinny.
Thanks, buddy.
Keith, just a couple of more questions before we let you go. Firstly, about that semi-final next weekend then between New Zealand and England, and a feeling like the de facto final in a way, that these may well be the two best teams in the competition. England's performance this morning against Australia in comparison to what New Zealand did against Ireland?
It's not like with like, but I thought England were very excellent again this morning. They have gone for... So for the All Blacks, when you look at it, and it's all about skill and precision and pure pace, England have gone for a high level of precision, but they've gone for a lot of big battering as well, and they picked a very, very physical team. Again, I thought it was a really, really good game of rugby that almost hinged on a few different things just not going Australia's way. Australia were... and have been well off the mark for about 4 years, but they've a phenomenal history in the Rugby World Cup of being able to overachieve at different times. That's why I wouldn't be betting against them for that game this morning. But I thought England showed a really high level of maturity. I thought they were very efficient and very, very clinical. And they took their chances really well. And so I thought it was a great game. I think it opens up to a phenomenal semi-final, and it'll be interesting to see what manner of play. But I mean, it's, if New Zealand can back up how they played today and play in a similar fashion, they're hard to play. They're going to be really hard to play against.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see England's team selection as well and what Eddie Jones does. Like Henry Slade coming in. Do you think that his performance means that he doesn't really have much to think about, or because of New Zealand's style of play, do you want that dual playmaker of George Ford coming back in?
I think he picked horses for courses, and I think he was afraid of Karevi and Koribati coming straight down into that channel in on top of George Ford. He still brought George Ford on with 20-25 to go. So I think he may revert back to the one that he's had all along. But also it gives them an additional option. I know it was mentioned in commentary and you could see it a couple of times, but that when England scored at the start, the first guy to them in his training bib was George Ford, So I think at times we still get caught too much into reading what's the starting 15. The sense of team here is 23 or maybe even 31.
You touched on it right at the start, I think, about the cycle of a World Cup and where Ireland fit in with that and the practicalities of having to be competitive as Six Nations in terms of funding the game within Ireland. And we can't just, it feels, write off a Six Nations. And probably from Andy Farrell's point of view, looking ahead already, he certainly can't write off a Six Nations, his first one, because Irish rugby right now feels like it's at a low point. He's very much associated with that and with the Joe Schmidt era, that I presume from his point of view, he needs to go in all guns blazing to this Six Nations. Whatever about blooding for the future, he needs to have a winning team probably right from the off.
Well, he'd like that. And, you know, you like a honeymoon period, but that's wishful thinking for the most part. But the view will be whether he puts a stamp on it in terms of selection. He's trying to bring some guys through. So Joe Schmidt brought a huge number of guys through in the last few years. I mean, the big difference from 4 years ago to now is he blooded a colossal number of players. The other difference is he didn't maybe use them. So I'm laughing looking at Steve Hansen's selection during the week, and I'm saying, okay, you pick Goodhue in the centre and you drop Ryan Crotty off the whole squad, and Ben Smith doesn't get picked at 15 or on the wing, and he's gone from the squad. And I'm saying, my God almighty, every other team would kill to have those guys in their ranks and on the field. So that's a different, it was a different philosophy. For the young guys that he gave their head to today, they were phenomenal. Goodhue had a really, really good 60 minutes. Having Beauden Barrett at 15, he's absolutely lethal at 15. And it goes down to that different sense. And they have far more strength and depth in New Zealand. And maybe that builds a bit of additional confidence in them, that maybe those guys' skill set, even if they've only a few caps to their name, is still of a standard that they can always trust. So what's Farrell going to do? I don't quite know.
That does feel like the most peculiar part almost of the last 4 years, that, as you say, I don't know how many times we've spoken this show about building up depth of talent in Irish rugby and Joe Schmidt bringing players into the squad, giving players minutes here and there. But when it came to it, just not quite trusting to throw them in at a World Cup.
Yeah, I think some of that goes on the players, if I'm honest. You know, if a guy's putting his hand up saying, pick me, pick me, pick me all the time by his performance, you would hope he'd get picked. So there's been a lot of criticism early on from whether Rory Best should be actually going. He's 37 years of age. He was being picked because he was playing better than anybody else. Still think that's pretty hard on a guy at 37 with the pace of the game that was there today. It was incredibly tough for him. But other people have to put their hands up too. So the coach's job is to pick the best players at his disposal. And if there's other people that are you know, pushing that standard, then they're going to get picked. So I think we did end up with a lot of players blooded. But I'd like to have seen a bit of a more of a spark from some of the younger guys coming through. So I don't know. Look, a lot of this is in retrospect. We can bitch and moan like anybody. We have that.
And we will.
We have that down pat when we need to, Nathan, you know. But I would still go back to the human side of this. There's a lot of guys here. We're fans, but there's a lot of guys here who have put their dreams and 4 years of their life into success, and they didn't get it today. So they're going to be in a pretty lonely spot.
All right, Keith, good stuff. I'm sure we'll chat to you again later in the week when you've had probably another chance to watch it back, if you can put yourself through it.
Not likely, I'd say, Nathan. I don't want to watch it again.
All right, Keith, thanks a lot for taking the call.
Cheers.
That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.